From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for listening. The Juneau Assembly discussed a list of more than 40 city services and facilities that could face reductions or closures for the first time at a Finance Committee meeting last night. Assemblymember Christine Wall chairs the Assembly Finance Committee. She started the meeting by acknowledging the difficult situation the Assembly is facing.
These are pretty startling to see, but you can't look at our finances and not have to start discussing some of these things. So that's where we're at.
The Assembly must close a multi-million dollar gap in the city's budget over the next few months. That's because voters passed a tax exemption on food and utilities and a cap on the city's property tax rate last fall. Those measures created an estimated $10 to $12 million recurring budget hole. The Assembly has until July 1st to finalize the city's budget before the next fiscal year begins. At the meeting on Wednesday, Assembly members discussed the list of ideas for reductions or closures to city services. The list was released Monday and includes hot-button items like closing the Diamond Park Fieldhouse, one of Juneau's two pools, and the Juneau Douglas City Museum. Other reductions on the list are reducing local grants, slashing some legal services, and the city staff's travel and training budgets. The Assembly didn't make any decisions at the meeting, but members asked city staff for more information on the different proposals. Some members wanted more details about the trade-off of closing one city pool over another, while other members wanted more on topics like transferring some city legal services to the state. The Assembly also discussed the ways the city could increase funding, both large ideas like raising utility rates and small ideas like requiring CAT licenses. Mary Beth Weldon suggested leasing out the Douglas Fire Station.
It's hardly used. It's got very old apparatus in it. There's not hardly any Douglas volunteers left as living quarters and bays, and I think it would be a good place for people to lease, and I think we'd make good revenue from it.
The Assembly will discuss proposed service reductions or increases to revenue before they vote. Residents can give public testimony on the topics at upcoming meetings on April 29th and June 6th. Thane Road will be closed tomorrow, Friday, April 24th, from 2 to 5 p.m., as the Alaska Department of Transportation conducts avalanche hazard reduction. The road will be closed at the avalanche gates during that time. If avalanche debris reaches the roadway, DOT says an extended closure may be necessary in order to remove it. And a week after a Ward airplane crashed and sank into Favorite Channel near Juneau, officials are still piecing together what happened. Last Thursday morning, a pilot reported a loss of engine power while flying from Haines to Juneau and then crashed into Favorite Channel near Boy Scout Beach. The U.S. Coast Guard issued an urgent marine information broadcast and launched a boat and helicopter response. The crash involved a Cessna single-engine propeller plane. At the time of the incident, the pilot was the only passenger and there was no cargo on board. The pilot was rescued from the downed craft in the water by another company plane. According to Alaska State Troopers, the pilot suffered minor injuries and hypothermia and was transported to a hospital. Clint Johnson with the National Transportation Safety Board says an investigation into the incident is still ongoing. He says it'll be hard to pinpoint the exact cause without investigating the wreckage itself. The plane is still at the bottom of the channel, and it's unclear if it can be recovered.
Without being able to lay hands on the airplane and be able to prove exactly what caused the engine failure, we're a bit of a loss at this point. But again, keep in mind, there's always a chance that we might be able to recover it, but I think it's highly unlikely at this point right now.
The pilot and the plane were from Ward Air, a private charter service in Juneau. Ward Air did not identify the pilot or provide a comment immediately following the incident, and again at a later inquiry. And the U.S. Forest Service is rethinking how it defines areas of the Tongass National Forest and wants the public to weigh in. One of the ideas is to designate recreation areas according to the amount of commercial recreation. And as KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, that might direct where and how the Forest Service issues permits for tourism operators.
The Forest Service is seeking public comment on a draft outline for its Tongass Forest Plan revision. In it, the agency proposes two types of recreation areas, high commercial use and low commercial use. The idea could guide the Forest Service on where to concentrate high-traffic tourism, but it's still just an idea. Barb Miranda is the deputy forest supervisor for the Tongass. She explained the idea to about 40 Juneau residents at a public meeting the agency recently held at its Juneau district office.
Think of it as sort of a zoning document from a city, but it's sort of a zoning document and an overall guidance for a forest.
This is part of the agency's revision process for the Tongass Forest Management Plan. The plan sets the Forest Service's overarching vision and goals for things like logging, subsistence, ecosystem health, and recreation. The current plan, made a decade ago, doesn't map high and low commercial recreation use areas, but it does classify recreation areas on a spectrum from urban to what the agency calls primitive. That spectrum guides where roads, motorized vehicles, and amenities go. Miranda says the agency wants to simplify how the plan organizes different parts of the forest, going from more than a dozen land use designations in the current plan to just a handful of management areas with special guidelines. And Miranda says the proposed recreation areas intend to address the growth of tourism in the Tongass.
The biggest employer is tourism, and the biggest impact to communities and how we develop communities is tourism.
Alex Pierce is the visitor industry director for the city and borough of Juneau, which is expecting 1.7 million cruise ship passengers this year. She says looking at recreation and tourism based on levels of intensity is a valuable exercise and could offer more clarity than the current plan.
I think there will probably be some evolution in the way that they look at the zones, but I do think that the zoning concept is a good idea.
She says it could help protect areas that residents don't want to see overrun by commercial tourism and could allow for development in areas where tourism is central. But Pierce says the plan should be adaptive, since some small Southeast communities want to expand tourism to boost local economies, like the village of Klawock on Prince of Wales Island. Don Nickerson is mayor of Klawock and president of Klawock Hina Corporation. He says the village of around 700 people welcomed six cruise ships in 2024, the first year its cruise port opened. This summer, he says he's expecting 58 cruise ships.
I think access, you know, to nature tourism and ecotourism is going to be huge. You know, from what I see with a lot of the guests that come into our port, you know, they're very interested in wildlife and natural beauty.
So he says it's important for Forest Service land accessible from Klawock to allow high recreation use in places where visitors can count on seeing bears, eagles, and salmon. Miranda says that while the Forest Service doesn't control the number of cruises coming to Southeast, the agency does issue permits to commercial operators who guide on the Tongass. She says high commercial recreation areas around towns with cruise ship ports, like the Mendenhall Glacier Recreation Area in Juneau, would continue to support many commercial tourism permits. On the other hand,
low commercial recreation use areas are places where locals might say, we wish you wouldn't put as many special use permit holders into those areas. Maybe that's just the place for the locals to know that they're not going to be overrun by commercial tourism.
The current comment period for the draft outline closes May 6. Miranda says the agency wants feedback from Southeast residents.
What are the places you don't want to see commercial tourism? Like, if there's places like that, then like let's hear from you. What are those?
In addition to commenting on recreation, Miranda says it's a chance for locals to weigh in on the other proposed management areas, including old growth forests, key fisheries watersheds, and community use areas. Miranda says the Forest Service plans to release a full draft of the plan at the end of the year, which will kick off another comment period. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
The State Senate Finance Committee released its first revision of the state's operating budget today, including a $1,000 permanent fund dividend and a $150 energy relief check. It comes about a week after the State House passed a budget with a $1,500 dividend. The Senate Finance Committee's version is quite a bit smaller than the version that's passed the House, in part because of a more conservative assumption about oil prices. The Senate's budget also leaves more room for capital projects around the state. The House's operating budget left little to none without drawing from savings. Senator Jesse Keel, a Juneau Democrat, who serves on the Finance Committee, says he'd rather see more money go to Alaskans facing high energy costs and struggling to make ends meet. He says it's a compromise.
We're determined to meet Alaska's needs and balance Alaska's budget on current revenues, and we're not going to dip into savings when revenues are high. You know, it doesn't have everything that I want to see in it or everything that anybody wants to see in it, but there's only so many dollars.
As public schools across the state continue to face serious financial trouble, school districts could receive up to $100 million in one-time funding under the Senate's plan, but only if oil prices remain high. The Senate's draft budget omits a number of priorities that passed the House, like extra transportation funding for schools and the revival of a dormant state funding heating assistance program. Senator Mike Kronk, a Tok Republican and the Senate minority leader, says he'd like to see state spending trimmed back farther.
I've always been a staunch person of keeping the budget as low as possible and making sure we're not adding to programs that add to the budget all the time. So I think I'm going to be focusing on that.
Proposed budget amendments are due Friday. Legislators have until mid-May to pass the budget, and it's typically one of the last items passed before the end of the legislative session. Civil rights advocates are suing over Alaska's decision last year to share confidential voter data, including home addresses, dates of birth, and partial social security numbers with the federal government. The American Civil Liberties Union filed the lawsuit in Alaska Superior Court in Anchorage on Wednesday on behalf of the League of Women Voters and the Alaska Black Caucus. The groups say in the lawsuit that turning over the state's full voter rolls to the Justice Department violated the privacy clause of the Alaska Constitution. And they say an agreement to purge voters from Alaska's rolls if the federal government identifies them as ineligible violates due process and voting rights protections. ACLU of Alaska legal director Eric Glatt says the state has its own process for removing voters identified as ineligible.
It's a detailed process. We don't think there's anything wrong with that process, and there's no need for the federal government to insist on who or who should and should not be eligible to vote in Alaska.
Experts have raised concerns. The database the federal government is using to identify ineligible voters is flawed and frequently flags voters who are, in fact, eligible. The Department of Law has yet to be served with a lawsuit, but it says the complaint ignores a state law that explicitly allows the state to share confidential information with other governments for legitimate purposes authorized by law. The state has said it would still follow its established procedures for removing ineligible voters from the rolls. Glatt with the ACLU says the groups are seeking a court order to make that promise binding.
Unfortunately, I think the only way Alaskans can be assured that they will not be disenfranchised from voting is by making sure that the Division of Elections and the state of Alaska commit to doing what's required of them in court.
The plaintiffs are also seeking a permanent injunction barring the state from turning over additional confidential voter data and a ruling that the decision to turn over voter data violated the state constitution. For now, though, the plaintiffs are not seeking faster action through a temporary restraining order or preliminary injunction, so it could be months or years before there's a ruling on the issue. And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's 47 degrees and overcast, though it looks like the clouds may clear up a little bit this afternoon and into tonight. This is KTIO. Thanks for tuning in.